You're listening to the ESP, the European Skeptics Podcast, an independent weekly show set out to bring you news, interesting topics and interviews with people mostly from Europe, building bridges and breaking down language barriers to show the world how active and awesome the skeptical movement is in the region. This is episode 423. I'm your host, András Pintér, and joining me for the show is my co-host, Pontus Böckmann. See ya.
Hejsan, hejsan. András, are you jet lagged?
A little bit, yes.
Yes. Okay.
Hello.
Hello.
Yes, I am. Yeah, I just got back from Taiwan, and I'm happy to report that I survived.
Mm-hmm.
It was a pretty good experience, and I am now even more reassured that I have to learn Chinese.
Okay. So, yeah. Do we have any listeners who are fluent in Chinese? Chinese is not just one language, though. So are we talking about Taiwanese, Shanghainese?
Well, Taiwanese is just a small variation of Mandarin.
Mm-hmm.
So it's basically Mandarin that we are talking about.
Yeah, that's the biggest that, one, right?
That, and I did start learning it, actually. Mm. But I've... You know what's difficult about that language? Is the intonations, because there are four different kinds of intonations, and you can use the same syllable with the same syllable. You can use four different kinds of intonations, and they all mean different.
Totally
things.
Different, yeah. And it could be mother-in-law or horse, and you have to be very careful not to confuse those two.
Exactly. And they all come with different characters as well. And obviously, the only thing that I have a chance of even trying to learn something of is the simplified Chinese characters.
Mm-hmm.
But in Taiwan, luckily for me, they use the traditional ones, which many occasions are very similar to the simplified ones. But in some cases, they are just completely different. So, yeah.
Well, lucky for us, we are running the European Skeptics Podcast, so we don't need
exactly.
to necessarily be fluent in Mandarin or Taiwanese or whatever.
At least not yet.
No. So now we're not getting a lot of emails from Taiwan. Unfortunately, I would love to have them, but we did receive feedback from last week or about last week and about the really wrong. This was about mm-hmm. Thomas Eriksson and his infamous books regarding the so-called personality test called DISC. It's also known as DISA, and there are many different versions of it, but his version is DISC. Oh, so the Swedish Skeptics also blogged about this, and there was a lot of reactions. A lot of people comes back to us and say that they can't believe what a success he's having when it's obviously such bullshit. But yeah, this system that he's using, he hasn't invented it, remind you. He's just appropriated it. And it doesn't explain anything. And people walk away from a course with him or from reading his books thinking that there's now an explanation for their own behavior or other people's behavior. I'm very hung up on rules, they can say, because I am a blue person. But the thing is... Being a blue person is just describing a person who likes rules. So you're a blue person because you like rules. And then you say, okay, that's why I like rules, because I'm a blue person. It's just circular reasoning. It doesn't say anything.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there are many other aspects to a human's or a person's personality that are more descriptive or better to use. And not that I subscribe to the idea, though, that you should put people into different classes or colors or groups, because people are very dynamic and you can be very interested in following the rules one day and the next day the situation, the context is different and you behave like another color,
yeah.
quote unquote. So, but it was good to get so much feedback, and thank you, especially Marcel Jean and Sibyl, and I hope I didn't butcher those names too much, but they both emailed us to share their experiences with DISC, and I appreciate it very much. Also, one thing, as the Swedish Skeptics blogged about Thomas Eriksson, we had some Swedish feedback there as well, and I learned that currently Eriksson's first book, the one that started it all, the one called Surrounded by Idiots, is currently on 26th place on Amazon's bestseller list in Australia. And it's a 10-year-old book by now. And he's still just raking in the money from this nonsense. Anyway, don't buy it, people. Don't buy it. It's all nonsense.
Yeah. But indeed, many thanks to anyone who gives us feedback, who contacts us, because we love hearing from you. As you mentioned earlier, yes, we would love to hear from someone who's fluent in Mandarin.
not just because we want to
teach
study.
Me something, no. But it would be interesting to know that someone from that part of the world is listening as well. The other thing is that feedback is very important for people who are doing a lot of work into something, who not necessarily doing this for the money, because for Ericsson, he does this for the money, that's for sure, because he earns a shitload of money with it. I'm pretty sure of that. And most pseudoscientists do that. But on our side, it's usually out of enthusiasm. We dedicate our free time to this. So yeah, recognizing that effort is very, very important. So yes, skeptics, especially those with an activist attitude, know very well that spreading the word about science and critical thinking and or just educating people about the ways of pseudoscience can often result in not only the lack of appreciation, but also serious pushback. Sometimes even hostility, right? Because lots of people, as I mentioned, have a vested interest in or simply don't know how to cope with their belief systems being shaken by a simple question or, God forbid, evidence. So we're always glad to see those heroes who take it upon themselves to still try to convey the message, no matter how hard it is. And those people need to be appreciated, encouraged, and celebrated. And this is what the John Maddox Prize for Standing Up for Science is all about. You've heard about it. Mm-hmm. If you're a long-time listener, you have heard about the John Maddox Prize, because every year when it comes out since 2015 was when we started the show, but since then, we mention it every year. So it has been awarded annually since 2012, and it's a joint initiative of the charity we think very highly of, Sense About Science, and the scientific journal everyone thinks very highly of, that is Nature. And the prize was named after the highly acclaimed Welsh theoretical chemist, I think he was a physicist as well, and science writer, the late Sir John Royden Maddox. And its purpose, the prize's purpose, is to recognize individuals for standing up for science and evidence, advancing the public discussion of difficult topics despite challenges or even hostility, and also bringing attention to all the effort that researchers are making to help the public understand evidence, because it's not easy. It's something that you have to teach the public, because evidence is not straightforward in many times. So this kind of effort is all to help build a world in which researchers can engage in public discussions about science in an open and honest fashion without having to fear consequences. Because if people don't understand evidence, don't understand why we say something that is based on evidence, and it goes against their belief systems or just their pet theories, they will get hostile in some occasions. So it's important to take a note of that. So if you know someone who does all that, why don't you nominate them for the John Maddox Prize? The exact criteria and the link to the nomination form are available on the website of the award, on Nature Awards. And obviously, the link will be provided on the show notes. And you have until the 20th of May to send in your nominations. Well, technically, you can self-nominate too. But
if you feel you deserve it, why not? But perhaps.
Yeah,
not.
I'm a bit of a hero. Why don't I nominate myself? But if you really do all that kind of work,
ask a friend.
Why don't you? I mean, yeah, ask a friend, or you can do it yourself. But just in case, you should get a good read of the eligibility criteria as well, which are also available on the website. And I have to mention that there are a couple of really big names among the former winners, some of whom we've had the chance to meet or even interview.
Indeed.
So Elizabeth Bick, mm-hmm. to name one, whom we interviewed on episode 308. Edzard Ernst, whom we interviewed a million times, and he doesn't really need an introduction to our listeners. And Britt Hermes, who was our guest on episode 50 back when.
Some time ago now.
Yeah, that was a long, long time ago in a galaxy far away. But So the nomination window has been open since the beginning of March, but you still have until the 20th of May. So go ahead and send in the names you want to put forward. And in October, a shortlist will be announced. And in November, the winner's identity will be known as well. Hmm. Each winner receives 5,000 euros, along with their work being featured on nature.com. So it's pretty cool. It's a very good way of appreciation and making some noise about people who are doing a lot of very important work.
Hmm. Yes, and there are other people doing a very important work in the world of science and, of course, in skepticism. And listeners, of course, would know that we have a history with Susan Gerbic and her Guerrilla Skepticism on Wikipedia project. And when you and I met for the first time, Andras, it was because we both talked to Susan at QED 10 years ago
and
now.
It was about that project, and it was 10 years ago. Yeah, Facebook just brought it up.
Yeah, but correction. I wanted to talk to Susan about something else, but it doesn't matter because we approached her at the same time in the same room, and then we started talking to each other, and then the three of us went for a famous lunch at McDonald's, I believe.
McDonald's,
and
yeah.
Then history was made.
That's the that's the thing, the photo of which came up on my wall
right.
today, actually. So yeah. it was really, really cool.
Yeah.
So 10 years ago, and this is why we call Susan the godmother of the podcast, because she brought us together.
Yeah. But the reason I'm bringing up Susan now is that she's just launched a new YouTube channel. It's about Wikipedia and how you go about to edit Wikipedia and what the rules are and why you have to do things in a certain way and what you cannot do and what, you know, everybody can edit Wikipedia, but if you don't know what you're doing, your edits may not be accepted. Or they are very likely being thrown out because you're not following the rules. You need to have citations and blah, 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 blah. It's not terribly complex, but there are rules and people do not always understand them. So she has started this YouTube channel. I think there's 10 short videos up there now, and I think she's adding more. I've seen a few of them. They explain how you go about things, how you start, what's necessary, and why certain things that you may feel is quite legitimate will be rejected by, but it's just because you don't follow the rules. So if you're interested in editing Wikipedia, if you want to join Susan's Guerrilla Skeptics project or not, in any case, I think it's a good idea to follow this channel and look at the videos, and we will link to it in the show notes. So well done, Susan, once again.
Yeah. Yeah, and I do encourage everyone, me, myself, being one of the editors in Guerrilla Skepticism on Wikipedia, unfortunately not having too much time on my hand, I cannot be as active as some of the other members are, but it's amazing. So if you feel lost, if you feel like you're alone with this, joining this team is the best thing you can get, because you will definitely have a lot of people that have your back. They will back you up with all the knowledge, all the experience they have, and you get the training from Susan, and you get to be in a cool place with a lot of cool people. And also, they always are on the lookout for international editors, so people who speak
Mandarin,
other languages than English. For example, Mandarin, yeah, as well. The greatest thing about Europe is the multilingual, multicultural aspect of it, I think. One of the greatest things. And we could use that, because a lot of Wikipedias in different languages other than English, they are in a bad shape or not in a good enough shape. Lots of articles are missing or at the stage of just being close to nothing piece of writing. So if you want to do something, that's the best thing to start with, because even a small change you make can make a lot of difference. And as they like to say in that team, you'll be educating the world in your sleep. When you make an edit and it sticks and people
and
find
it's there forever,
that information
yeah.
that you put out there, that's there. And you did that, and you made that happen. So if you feel like doing something and you've always felt like doing something, but you've never got around to do it, this is the time to act. And find Susan and start by just watching these videos, because they are amazing. So this is usually the part of the show that we don't know how to categorize things that we want to talk about, that we definitely want to talk about them. And occasionally this lasts a little bit longer than expected. So we should probably move on to the usual segmented parts of the show. And the first part of that is usually Twitch, which is This Week in Skeptical History. And this week, we have a very special guy to talk about on the occasion of his birthday, which is on the 16th of April. That happens to be the day of this recording. And why he's so special is that he was nominated once again for the Hungarian Skeptic Society's Flat Earth Awards.
Ooh.
This is his third nomination out of the four awards that have been announced, and the second time he made it to the finals as well. So I think it's clear that he has a place in the ESP's Pseudoscientists Hall of Fame.
Hall of Shame.
So, yeah, but who is it? We have to put a name to that figure as
well.
Is
he called Gabor? Everybody in Hungary is called Gabor.
No, he's not called Gabor. He's called Norbert.
Norbert.
And his name is Norbert Schobert, which was not his
birthday. We've heard of him before, of course.
Yes.
And his name rhymes, but you say it's not really right. But I won't say Norbert Schorber, but it doesn't really rhyme, does it?
Well, the last four characters are the same, so it does rhyme.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, there are some debates over whether he uses an accent on the O of his surname.
He's not sure himself, right?
No, he's not sure himself. his surname comes from his stepfather's surname, because his surname was one of the most frequently used surnames, Horvat. Yeah, every second person is called Horvat in this country. And by the way, it means Croatian, but never mind. This is not about the names.
Okay. This is not why he's nominated.
No. And I have to tell you that he's a household name in Hungary. Everyone knows him for being the foremost promoter of dieting and exercise. Mm-hmm. And, well, I think we all agree that there is nothing wrong with the latter.
Yeah.
I mean, exercising is good. It's the fact that he moved forward and started marketing his own low-carb product under the brand called Update. Yeah, this was the dietary side of things, and he hasn't always made a lot of sense. Obviously, with the product, along came a lot of far-reaching claims as to what kind of positive health effects those products have. After a while, it wasn't just about losing weight or not having too much calories. It was about all kinds of healthy outcomes, like avoiding disease and stuff. So as a result of that, obviously, the Hungarian Competition Authority has had lots of clashes with his company. And since 2005, they have fined them, I mean the company, for an overall sum of around a couple of millions of euros.
Mm-hmm.
So we're talking about a lot of money. And, well, they could easily pay those fines because they made a shitload of money.
It's just the cost of doing business for them, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Just an ordinary expense that you have to calculate with. Well, once in a while we have to pay some fines, but it's still worth it.
Exactly. Because those people that we scam spend a lot of money with our company, obviously. But for some reason that I don't necessarily want to go into details about, after the last fine, he left the company, which is now under dissolution. Mm-hmm. So he didn't pay the last fine, which was 40 million Hungarian forints. That's about 100,000 euros.
Mm-hmm.
He never paid those fines. And that was a fine because the Hungarian Competition Authority ruled that they have scammed their customers with overreaching claims as to the effects or health effects of the product. But of course, he never left the public discourse. And he's always there in the media. He's everywhere. And this year, he made himself the target for skeptics by announcing his regret over vaccinating against COVID, which was a pretty big thing to do, and that he has serious doubts about the moon landing.
Is that related, really? I don't know. I wish I hadn't been vaccinated because the moon landing didn't happen. I mean, how do people connect?
No, they weren't connected. It was just two different things that he made himself a target with.
Yeah, I understand. But somehow it is connected, because people who believe in one strange thing believe in all of them.
Yeah, I think in his case, the connection is conspiracy theories.
Yeah.
So he has expressed a couple of very weird ideas, and he did go into that a little bit. So he drifted towards conspiracy theories when it came to his company going down as well. So
of course.
There are those forces that are trying to put us out of business and things like that. So, we'll see if the Hungarian skeptics decide to give him our Flat Earth Awards this year. Mm-hmm. But until then, I'd like to invite everyone to join me in wishing Norbert Schobert a very happy birthday and many happy returns. Just please, not into the business of health care products and stuff, and definitely not into people's minds. So the happy returns only referred to the birthdays. Yeah, so the 16th of April 1971 was when he was born.
All right.
Okay, and I'll definitely tell you if he gets the Flat Earth Awards this year, but I won't know until the next recording. So yeah, but what's new in Europe? Let's see and find out.
Yes. Well, I don't know if it's new, really, because this is something that's recurring, it seems like, every year now. But it's a classic old-timey skeptic item, so I think we need to talk about it. The Loch Ness Monster is back in the news. People may remember that there was a big hunt for Nessie last summer, with people traveling en masse to Loch Ness. And they had hydrophones and heat censoring cameras and drones and people standing on the shores with binoculars, the whole thing. There was a lot of people there, I think well over 100 people, maybe more than that. And that is regrettable, because I think it's a nice place with wildlife and stuff. And that, even though there's no monster there, why do you need to invade it like that? You're disturbing a lot of animals, I'm sure, and even plants, of course, if you trample the bushes and litter the side of the loch with garbage. Anyway, before we talk about what's new this week, I want to share with you the quite sensational results from last year's hunt for Nessie. And here they are. Please listen to this.
We didn't see anything.
Nessie is just shy. It's not a problem for us. We are both shy too.
There has been a couple waves that looked suspicious, but that was mainly just a wave. Yeah.
So that's the results from last year's fantastic exercise. Doesn't deter the dedicated cryptozoologists of the world. So, fueled by last year's astounding success, they are now planning for a new event, which is on the 30th of May to 2nd of June. Just happens to be the same dates as the European Skeptics Congress in Lyon, in France. So, unfortunately, we can't be there, guys. We have to be in France, being skeptical. And if you haven't signed up yet, please do so now. We will put that link in the show notes as well. So, last year they had all of these high-tech things that I mentioned, hydrophones and scanners and things. But this time, we read in the paper that they are upping their game. This time they are turning to NASA.
Oh.
We read the headlines. That's that NASA is invited to help them. I'm not quite sure why, really, because NASA mostly is up in space, not down below the water. I don't think we've seen any signs of Nessie in the skies. Or maybe that's where she is hiding. I don't know.
No, it's definitely from orbit where you will be able to detect something from.
Maybe. Or maybe NASA has some very special submarines that they will send to Scotland that I don't know about.
The next astronauts will be trained in the waters of Loch Ness.
I'm sure they will.
They did go through a lot of water training, like weightlessness. This is the closest they can get to weightlessness. So this is why it's part of
the
their
question
training.
Is how much does a big monster weigh in the water, and how do you fit her into one of the spacesuits? That's the problems that they're working on at the moment. But of course,
you have to find it first. Yeah. have to find it first and then put a spacesuit on it.
A challenge.
Difficult tasks.
But if somebody, if someone can do it, it's NASA. I'm sure. But of course, if you read the whole thing, the articles that you see in the papers, and not just the headlines, the news is really that these people organizing this somehow hope that NASA will volunteer to help. And they don't actually know anybody at NASA, so they have tried to get in touch with NASA through social media and haven't heard anything back yet, but maybe. And then that makes a big headline in the papers. So no real connection to NASA at all. But I come back to this. The real problem here is not that people are having a good time going to the beautiful parts of Scotland, having a field day. That's fine. And they're not going to disturb a monster as such, because I'm quite sure that there is no monster there. But there's a lot of other things in the surroundings there. Wildlife, animals, plants that should be left alone. And there's no need for a massive invasion of googly-eyed cryptozoologists to mess up the beautiful landscape there, the nature there. So I think, please, maybe you should stay at home. And I do hope that NASA do not show up, because they know better than that.
Yeah, but you know that it's all about keeping the actual destination afloat.
Afloat. I don't think that's
so it's like it's a tourist destination. You need to keep it in the news so that people keep their interest in going there, which I'll be doing, by the way, mm-hmm. very soon. Mm-hmm. On the 11th of May, I'm heading out to Scotland.
Tell us if you find
with
anything strange.
With a tour. Yeah. Every single time I go there, I look very, very hot. But it's, I don't know, perhaps it's my methods that are at fault. I don't know.
Or Nessie may just be shy, like they said from last year's expedition.
But I'm not, so. And that reminds me of something. Also, that thing you mentioned about them just shouting out in the open and hoping that NASA will listen. You know what I was doing when I was a little kid and I was really hoping to meet aliens? I went up to one of the sour cherry trees in our backyard and I grabbed a torchlight and I was flashing the torchlight towards one of the constellations that I had read was one of those where they caught some very interesting signals from. So
I know what happened now. You blinded them in their little flying saucers, so then they crashed back in, and now they keep them at Area 51 in the US. It's your fault.
Yeah, this is why they crashed, so it's my fault.
Yes.
Even though it happened much earlier than I was even born, but okay.
They were time traveling involved as well.
Never mind. Yeah. Some time traveling, which is common sense wisdom that it's the case with aliens all the time. Yeah. So let's make some sense. And the best organization to do that is called Sense About Science. And we really admire the work that they do. And some of the things that they have achieved a couple of years ago was something that's called Evidence Week. And Evidence Week is about people of the general public meeting their MPs, members of parliament, that is happening in the UK. And ask them questions about different kinds of policies, whether they are based on evidence. This is something that is so cool when it comes to holding our members of parliament accountable.
It's a trick question, right? Because politicians, they want to say yes, but they all know they're not about evidence. They're about public opinion. They say whatever they think that the public want to hear.
Okay, but it's not a yes no question. So it's about the MPs being able to present the evidence that they base the policies on. So how it's done is that Sense About Science, organizing this from the background, they ask people to submit their questions that could be sent off to Westminster, And there is a kickoff event, something that is called Evidence Week, where the members of the general public can actually meet MPs who are members of select committees of parliament and stuff. So they will be actually answering those questions that had been previously submitted. It's really amazing. And it kicks off on Monday, the 24th of June at between 5 and 6:30 p.m. That is when the opening event of Evidence Week happens. And then after that opening event, a week of those sessions will appear. It's really cool. The only problem is that it focuses on UK-based policies. So it's only open basically to UK-based people as well. But I think this is an amazing example of how we could hold our members of parliament accountable. Mm. So if these events get more publicity, that sends the message that we can actually make that happen. We can actually ask our members of parliament to base their policies on evidence and not only what's politically easier or more profitable. Because the problem is that policies usually have a long-term effect. And if you don't base them on evidence or science, it can really lead to a lot of issues in the long run. So that should be a no-brainer. But unfortunately, most of MPs have their own fish to fry, so it's not necessarily our interest that they have in mind, or not as a priority. So this is a good step forward, and this has been around for a while, since 2018, actually, when the first Evidence Week happened. And ever since, Sense About Science has been organizing this on a yearly basis. And in 1 year, in 2022, they didn't only organize this in Westminster, but also in Holyrood, which is in Scotland, so the Scottish Parliament. Mm. So, well done.
Did they ask about Nessie then?
Probably. I don't know how many policies include things about Nessie, but
I think there wasn't there a proposal? I don't think it happened. Some proposal from some MP that we need to protect Nessie from extinction or something like that. I may be making this up, but I think that was a couple of years ago.
Yeah, I don't recall any of that, but that could just easily be my mind not working properly. Don't forget, I'm massively jet-lagged, so it could be just that. Yeah, so Evidence Week is happening this year as well, between the 24th and the 28th of June. And they are expecting a lot of questions. So we will share the link to the questionnaire where you can actually, the form where you can actually hand in your questions.
Hmm. Good. Good initiative.
It is. It is really good. Let's move on to find out who's been really wrong, because we've talked a lot about what good things are happening. Let's find out who's been really wrong lately. This week, we will be talking about something that's happening in Hungary. We decided that I will be taking over talking about our really wrong and handing out our really wrong award. So let me ask you a question. Let's assume you are in control of a country and you have to run a certain healthcare system. Mm. You decide not to spend too much money on it, so people are leaving the system. It's massively overwhelmed with patients, and the problem is that waiting lists are, well, several years long now. But you still have to provide some kind of healthcare.
Mm.
What do you do?
Well, I haven't been in that position. It's a difficult one, of course. But I would make sure that all I propose is very much based in science and rational thinking. And I'm sure that this is where we're going, I'm sure.
Yes. So instead of what you're proposing, we are heading towards the kind of solution that Mao Zedong was trying to do back in the day, he started promoting traditional Chinese medicine instead of real medicine.
The barefoot doctors.
Because of a shortage of healthcare professionals.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, a lot of people needing healthcare, a healthcare system. So this is in a way what's happening here in Hungary. And one of those examples is the László Elek Hospital and the Diagnostical Center of Orosháza. Orosháza being one of the towns of Hungary. And this hospital apparently offers Reiki as one of the available therapies on the Hungarian healthcare system.
There's a lot of savings there, I guess. You don't need any tools. You don't need any education. You don't need any sense, basically. So, yeah.
So it looks like a hospital that is run under the Hungarian public healthcare system offers Reiki as one of the available treatments. Well, it's not. It is part of the hospital's so-called healthcare promotion office activities, but they claim that there is a high demand for that kind of treatment. And some doctors have their doubts about the efficacy of those treatments.
I'm sure they do.
But it is still provided as a free kind of intervention. And it is stamped, obviously, with the logo of the Ministry of the Interior, the healthcare system is under at the moment.
Maybe we should just go into what Reiki is, if people are not aware. I think most of our listeners are.
But Reiki is basically a touch-based healing method. You convey energy through the touch of your hand. It's supposed to unblock the flow of energy in your system, supporting the body's self-healing and self-regenerating system, which is all kinds of bullshit. But some of the doctors of this hospital claim that it can help preserve patients' mental health. Well, I have my doubts, because if you believe in a bogus therapy and that's what you want to maintain your mental health with, that's a wrong way to go down. Actually, there were trial sessions in March. One of them, the Hungarian news outlets, they did approach the hospital and this health promotion office as well. And they claim that there were trial sessions. And after the trial sessions, they realized that they can release a lot of stress. So people who are under too much stress can be relieved of that, which is still something that is so not convincing. And the whole method is unscientific. It's so bogus that when it's offered under the normal healthcare system, it doesn't do anything else but scams people. It basically is something that gives you the idea that your healthcare professionals are treating you, whereas there is no treatment whatsoever because it's all bullshit.
Yeah.
So for promoting bullshit in a public healthcare environment and providing patients with a non-scientific, pseudoscientific bullshit treatment, the Hungarian Hospital of Orosháza, the László Elek Hospital, gets this week's prize for being really wrong.
Yeah, really wrong.
It comes from Japan, by the way, but
doesn't help.
It builds on the even more ancient Chinese concept of qi, which is bogus as well. So, Anyhow, moving on to something that we usually finish the episodes on, and that is a quote. And this time, Pontus, I think you've got a quote for us.
Yes, I do. And I talk a lot about religion, or I have been doing that for a long time on this show. So I thought this was appropriate. We have a very famous atheist, Christopher Hitchens, now sadly demised, but he had his moments. He was funny, but he was also a little bit of a bully. But he said this.
Yeah, he was, yeah.
Emancipate yourself from the idea of a celestial dictatorship, and you've taken the first step to becoming free. End quote. So
here.
Yeah, we're talking about a dictatorship. I've called the Pope a dictator several times, but the big dictator is sitting one step above the Pope, right?
And probably doesn't exist.
Yeah. Well, yes, I don't think he does exist. But if he exists, if you believe he exists, you have also to admit that he's saying, you have to love me or I will throw you to eternal damnation in hell. And that's less than kind.
Yeah, that is the kind of attitude that brings you to the conclusion that this person needs therapy, right?
So, you mean Reiki or something?
This is what I really loved about the series Lucifer.
Yeah. That was fun.
The concept that the devil goes to see a therapist and then talk about all kinds of problems that he has, and then comes the family and all that. Yeah. So
it was a good one.
God needs a therapist.
I enjoyed that a lot as well.
All right. But that brings us to the end of today's episode. Many, many thanks, Pontus.
Thank you.
And I'd like to thank our listeners as well for tuning in. Please keep doing so. And until next week, goodbye.
Hey, do.
Vislat.
Tschüss.
This has been your ESP experience. The show is produced and recorded by the ESP.eu. Join us again next time, but until then, please send your feedback, comments, or death threats to info@theesp.eu. We would also love to hear your ideas and suggestions regarding future episodes, as well as news from your country of residence that might interest others across the continent. If you have a local event or organization to promote, please don't hesitate to let us know, as we are more than happy to help. All music in the program was written and performed by Keisha J. Gray and George Schwab and is used with their permission. Please check out our webpage at www.theesp.eu, follow us on Twitter at @espodcast_eu, and like us on Facebook. I don't know how you can believe.
I'm your host, András Pintér, and joining me for the show is...
Arabaza.
And joining... fuck. And joining me for the show is my co-host. Have their own personal fries to frish.
fish and chips. Fucking fish and chips. Okay, very good.
they have their own fish to fry.